It is possible that you were confused in your reading. For perhaps you were troubled when you read about Babylon being talked about once again. We left off in chapter 17 seeing Babylon destroyed, devoured. And now in chapter 18, Babylon is mentioned over and over, and it seems to be being destroyed once again. So what's the deal? And for you who were reading through this section and studying, perhaps it was a bit confusing, but here's the thing that you got to see. The Babylon of chapter 17 and the Babylon of chapter 18 are two different entities. Chapter 17 of Revelation deals with Babylon in a figurative sense. That is, it's a system, it's a false religious system that goes by the name Mystery Babylon. Because, as we talked about in our study last time, Babylon historically was the center of all false religion, mentioned clear back in the opening of the book of Genesis, chapter 8, then again in chapter 10, chapter 11. So chapter 17 talks in a figurative, symbolic sense of spiritual Babylon, which is headquartered in the city of seven hills, which is Rome. But chapter 18 is not dealing with a symbolic Babylon, but it rather deals with a literal city. Not a religious system, but a literal city. Chapter 18 of Revelation deals with economic Babylon. Chapter 17 deals with religious Babylon. Chapter 18 is political and economic, you see. And the difference is quite easy to see when you compare the two. In chapter 17, that Babylon, we see, was hated by the kings of the earth. Verse 16 of chapter 17. The kings hated her and destroyed her. But in chapter 18, this Babylon, the economic Babylon, is loved by the kings of the earth. Verse 9 of chapter 18, the kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. So it's a different thing, you see. They hated the religious system, chapter 17, but they loved the economic city of chapter 18. Now, in this, we read that it has to be two different entities because in verse 1, it starts out this way. After these things, what things? After the things of chapter 17, the destruction of religious Babylon, that one world religious system that will form after the rapture of the church, when all true believers from every denomination are taken up into heaven, what is left will come together in a coalition, a false system that will be headquartered in Rome and will then be initially in partnership with Antichrist and the 10-nation confederation of Europe. Initially, they'll seem to be working in tandem, but Antichrist and these kings will ultimately turn around and devour the religious system. And the religious system plays right into the hand of Antichrist and the European Union, the revived Roman Empire. Which intrigued me because in this morning's paper, in our little Medford Mail Tribune, there is this article in the international section. AP story from Gniezno, Poland. In an extraordinary gathering, Pope John Paul II brought seven European presidents together Tuesday, telling them that a newly united continent, Europe, can neither ignore its Christian roots nor be a club exclusively for the rich. In this extraordinary gathering, presidents came from Poland, Germany, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Lithuania, and the Ukraine. While only Germany is a member of the European Union and NATO, most of the others are presently waiting for admittance. And the story goes on. To talk about this event that took place this last week, where the Pope is gathering together the heads of European nations and telling them straight out that they must not ignore their Christian roots. He's gathering them together, talking about unity in Europe and talking about the role that Christianity must play in the reuniting of Europe. Interesting story that was in the paper today. And chapter 17 deals with that issue. That is, that this religious system based in Rome is going to seemingly be controlling the European coming together, the nations that are of the revived Roman Empire, but that's only going to last for a certain season. For those kings will turn against Rome, devour the system, and then that takes us into chapter 18. Once the religious system is devoured, it's served its purpose. The Antichrist and the European leaders used it to gain power, to gain control of the reins of power over the world. Then they will, after they use it, they'll trash it. For you see, that's what Babylon is called, a harlot, a whore, in chapter 17. You use it, you abuse it, you trash it. That's exactly what's going to happen. But this other Babylon, see, when you talk about Babylon, not only was it the beginning spot for all false religions, but it was also the beginning of world commerce. Remember the Tower of Babel? They come together, all people come from everywhere in a united project to make a name for themselves, to build a tower whose top would reach to heaven. Actually, as we talked about in our study last time, a ziggurat that would allow the studying of the stars for the purpose of astrological observations. And in this coming together of all people there on the plain of Shinar, you see, it was not only a religious thing, but it was also a political coalition, an economic endeavor. So Babylon has its roots in both false religion and in economic endeavorings. And thus, Babylon, talked about in chapter 18, is not the religious aspect of Babylon, but the economic aspect of Babylon. Now, here is an intriguing thing for you to think through. Is this Babylon that's being talked about in chapter 18? If you're saying, John, and I think you'll see this as we go through the chapter, if it really is a literal city, are you talking about literal, physical Babylon in Iraq? See, Babylon is located about 50 miles from Baghdad. It's been a rather unimportant place for many, many, many centuries, until Saddam Hussein came to power. Nebuchadnezzar is Saddam Hussein's hero. Did you know that? Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, he has a coin minted where his picture, his face, is on one side and Nebuchadnezzar's image is on the other side. Nebuchadnezzar is his hero. He makes no bones about that, because Nebuchadnezzar was the last king of Babylon, which we call Iraq today, who was able to put his thumb on the Jew and control Israel. Remember Nebuchadnezzar who built the monstrous statue there in Daniel chapter 2? Remember Nebuchadnezzar who in chapter 4, he looked out over the marvelous city of Babylon, this city of splendor that was surrounded by two huge walls, so wide were the walls they could raise six chariots on top of the walls that surrounded the city. It was a fabulous city, and I don't have time tonight to go into all the dimensions and glory and splendor. Suffice it to say, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon are one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And Nebuchadnezzar, this king of Babylon, is there in the city. He looks out over his city, the splendor, the majesty, the architectural brilliancy. And he says, "My, look what I have done." Do you recall what happened then? He turned into a beast for 7 years. Seven, isn't that an interesting number? Babylon. A place of incredible wealth and beauty, architectural glory, sophistication. Man, it was a happening spot. It was the happening spot in the world, you see. But then it was wiped out. The Medes and the Persians, they wiped out Babylon. But did they really, according to the prophecies of the Bible? You might want to jot these down and look them up later, but let me read to you from Isaiah, where it talks about Babylon and it being destroyed. In Isaiah chapter 13, we read in verse 19, "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch a tent there, neither shall shepherds make their fold there, but wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there, and wild beasts shall cry in the desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come. Her days shall not be prolonged." And then in Jeremiah, I'll read to you from chapter 51, where again, talking about Babylon once more, very directly. Jeremiah 51, talking about Babylon, verse 24, "I will render unto Babylon and all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in the sight of Zion. I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroys the earth. I will stretch out my hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain." And then, verse 26, "They shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone for foundations, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith the Lord." Now, I shared that with you not simply to take some time and read some obscure scripture, but to simply say the prophet Isaiah, the prophet Jeremiah, both were inspired by the Spirit to say Babylon is going down like Sodom and Gomorrah, disappeared off the face of the map, wiped out, desolate. Not even shepherds and their flock will hang out there. It'll simply be a place for weird birds and wild animals. And it will be desolate forever and ever. Now here's the interesting thing. Has this prophecy been fulfilled? And therein you have a great debate. There are those that say, well, when you look at Babylon, I mean, when the Medes and Persians came through and subsequent centuries passed on, it became nothing. True, but there was always inhabitants there in Babylon. Always a small village. Oh, never like it was in the glory and splendor in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, indeed. But nonetheless, there has always been small little communities in the area of Babylon. And then Saddam Hussein came into power. And 15, 16 years ago, he commissioned a team of brilliant Japanese architects to come over, and guess what he has done? He has rebuilt Babylon. The palace of Nebuchadnezzar is complete. The gate of Ishtar is complete. The main royal paveway is complete. The wall is pretty much getting done. Saddam Hussein, because of his obsession with Nebuchadnezzar, wanted to recreate the city of Babylon to a smaller degree, yes, but still, it's a huge undertaking that has taken hundreds of millions of dollars to even begin the work. And you can go there today if you want to take a vacation to Iraq. And Hussein's desire and plan was to make Babylon a huge, huge place like Jerusalem for tourism, for people to be inspired about the history of Babylon, and to accomplish political purposes, and that is ultimately to make Babylon a center for all of the Arab world, and ultimately, if possible, for all of the known world. So this is where you have the debate. Babylon has begun to reemerge. And you can go to the bookstore, you can go to your travel book places and get picture books and take a look for yourself at the rebuilding of Babylon. It's quite an interesting story. So, will it be then that Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar is rebuilding as sort of a center of tourism, as a monument in honor of Nebuchadnezzar, his hero? Is that going to be the Babylon that's talked about here? Because Isaiah's prophecy and Jeremiah's prophecy about it being destroyed forever seems to not have come to pass, not really, but some teachers say, well, yes, it has. Close enough. What do I think? What do you care? I want to share with you something that's not a little controversial, but I think you'll find somewhat interesting as we work through this chapter. Babylon. What does this mean? Well, let's take a look back in chapter 18. After these things, again, the destruction of religious Babylon, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power. And the earth was lighted with his glory. We're now at the end of the tribulation period. Now, you know what the tribulation is by this time. It's found in chapters 6
to 19.
And it lasts for
7 years.
Precisely. Now, the church is not there in the tribulation, for the church is seen in chapters
4 and 5.
And it's tucked away. Exactly, because you see, church history comes to a completion at the end of chapter
3,
because chapters 2 and
3
depict in its
entirety.
Perfect. So you have church history, chapters 2 and 3. After these things, chapter 4, verse 1, the church is in heaven. Chapters 4 and 5, the church is in heaven. Then comes the tribulation, chapter 6. Chapter 6 comes after chapters 4 and 5. Always has, always does, always will. Chapter 4 and 5, the church is in heaven. Then 6 through 19, the tribulation. And now we are at the end of the tribulation period. By the way, do you realize that we only have a few more sessions in Revelation? I mean, it's amazing to me. And at the end, we get raptured, folks. That's it. Wouldn't that be grand? That would be great. So I'm going to go real fast tonight. After these things, I saw another angel come down. The earth was light with his glory. And he cried with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations, there's a clue, all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. The merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. So there's interaction. There's commercial intercourse. There is a fornication taking place here that involves all nations. Every nation has interaction with Babylon. Every nation is affected by Babylon. Every nation is dependent on Babylon. All nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Verse 3. Well, I heard another voice, verse 4, from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. This voice from heaven is talking to those who, in the tribulation, become believers. The church already taken up to heaven, but the Lord will still be saving souls. And in the tribulation, there will be a huge, huge number of people who are converted to Christ, who finally get it and believe it. And here is a clarion call coming from the heavens. Stay away from Babylon. Come out. Don't get involved with her. Verse 6, reward her even as she rewarded you, double unto her, double according to all her works. Even as she has done, so let it be done to her. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. What she has been doing, let it come back upon her own head. Oh, verse 7, how much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously. So much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Interesting. Babylon, who's had interaction with all nations, and all nations have been involved with her in her fornication, now says, I'm a queen, I'm not a widow. I'm a queen. I'm not impoverished or in need of anything. And she says, I see no sorrow. Interesting, folks. It doesn't mean that there is no sorrow. It says she refuses to see sorrow. The implication is, well, Marie Antoinette. Remember what happened with the French Revolution? They came to Marie Antoinette and said, Your Highness, the people are hurting. There's no bread anywhere in the city of Paris. There's no bread. And she, in her out-of-touchedness, said, well, let them eat cake. She missed the point entirely. She, in her palace there in Paris, was out of touch, and she saw no sorrow. And that, of course, was the problem that caused ultimately the French Revolution to do what it did. She saw no sorrow. And so too, Babylon says, I don't see any poverty. Babylon is so absorbed in her own delicacies, her own materialism, her own economy. She does not see the sorrow of people that are even within her own boundaries. Ah, let them eat cake. I don't see any problem. Therefore, God says, verse 8, her plagues come in one day, death, mourning, famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. She's going to be burned. God says, you claim to be a queen, you see no sorrow, but I look at you differently. you're going to be judged thoroughly. The kings, verse 9, of the earth, who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her, they're going to bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. Standing afar off for fear of her torment, that is, not wanting to be tormented with the same torment that Babylon is being tormented with, they're going to stand away, but they're going to lament her that day. They're going to be grieved, bewailing, mourning, but standing off, saying, alas, verse 10, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. This phrase will crop up over and over again, in one single hour. What would be impossible, unthinkable, preposterous, crazy in John's day to think of a city, a big city being destroyed in an hour? Impossible. Put yourself in John's sandals. This is blowing him away to see this vision of a city of unbelievable wealth and power and majesty burning up in one single hour, and people watching her and saying, I don't want to get next to Babylon lest I be tormented with the torment that's tormenting her. I have the privilege of reading old commentaries occasionally, and it's so fun to read what the guys were writing about, 100 years ago. Even then, the idea of a big city being burned and destroyed in a single hour, they said, we don't understand this, and certainly John must be using a figure of speech, for no city can be destroyed in an hour. Of course, now we say, no problema. I mean, we're in the age of nuclear weaponry that would do just that, that could destroy a city, could destroy a nation, could destroy the world in a single hour, and those places that receive the devastation of atomic detonation would cause those that are around to say, hey, we're not going there, lest we be affected by the fallout. We'll just watch Wolf Blitzer report it, and we'll just stay here and watch it on TV, but we're not going to go there, lest we be plagued too. The merchants, verse 11, of the earth shall weep and mourn, for no man buyeth their merchandise. Oh no, not that they're saying, oh, these poor people in Babylon, they're saying, oh no, the world economy is doomed with the destruction of Babylon. The world economy is wiped out. And then they go through this litany. Now watch this description. It's like a huge, big Saks Fifth Avenue or iMagnum or what's a fancy store? What's the fanciest store? Bloomingdale's. There you go. The merchants are weeping because, watch this. Now watch the departments here. Department number one, the jewelry department. Gold, silver, precious stones, and pearls. Oh no, the jewelry department is no more. And then we move on to the next floor, the clothing floor. Fine linen, purple, silk, and scarlet. And then home furnishings and kitchenware. Thine wood, which was used for furniture, fine furniture. And all manner vessels of ivory, ivory Tupperware, not Tupperware, but what do you call it? Ivory, yeah. And all manners of vessels most precious from wood and brass and iron and marble. This is all home furnishings, you see, and kitchenware and fancy utensils. And so we come now to the fourth department, which is cosmetics and spices, cinnamon, odors, ointments, verse 13, frankincense, stuff that makes you smell good. So you see these departments, floor after floor in this Bloomingdale's, just disappearing. And then we come to fine foods, gourmet, wine and oil, fine flour, wheat, beasts, which means fillets, folks, and sheep. So the fine foods now, these are all exquisite delicacies, Epicurean kind of stuff, the foods that are listed here. And then we move to the sixth floor or sixth section, which is automotive, horses and chariots. So we get into the automotive stage here. And the merchant, oh no, the horses and chariots, oh no, Broncos and Mustangs, and oh my goodness. And they're weeping. They can't believe it. The economy has collapsed. The whole world is affected. And the merchants and the world is saying, oh no, our economy. And then the basement, slaves, or as your margin renders it, if you have a Bible that renders words more accurately, the word slave there is literally bodies and souls of men. It's the adult bookstore section. Bodies and souls of men. X-rated. The whole thing crashes down. What I want you to see here is that not one of these things deals with life's necessities. They're all luxuries. It's materialism gone mad. It's pleasure seeking. It's sensuality. It's senseless accumulation of stuff. Nothing in this list in these days in which John was writing deals with daily living, common stuff. These are all luxury items. And Babylon is the center of unbelievable wealth in the eyes of all other peoples of the world. They're all saying, Babylon had it. And now it's up in smoke, and that's going to affect us, because who's going to buy our goods, as we shall see? The whole store collapses. And the fruits, verse 14, that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee. And all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from thee, and thou shalt find them no more at all. So the merchants, verse 15, of these things which were made rich by her, all those that imported their stuff to Babylon, or exported their stuff, I should say, to Babylon, the merchants of the world are saying, oh no, who's going to buy our Nikes that we're sewing in these shops and factories? Who's going to buy all the stuff that we're producing for Babylon? Babylon is the consumer that drives the world economy, and now who's going to buy our stuff? The merchants will say, oh no, they were made rich by her. They shall stand afar off for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, saying, verse 16, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour so great riches has come to naught. And every shipmaster, these are the exporters, the importers, all the company and ships and sailors, as many as trade by sea, stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And now we have a problem with those that say, yes, Babylon, that Saddam Hussein has rebuilt in the process of rebuilding. Interesting, by the way, in the Gulf War, Babylon, the restructuring, the rebuilding of Babylon was absolutely off limits for any military excursions by our troops or the Gulf War coalition. They were absolutely forbidden by our general, Schwarzkopf and Colin Powell and the powers that be. They were not to touch the rebuilt city of Babylon, no matter what. It's an interesting story. Because of its archaeological, its historical, its cultural significance, they were not to touch Babylon. And interesting, because a report surfaced that there was fear that Saddam Hussein would end up hiding out in Babylon, that he would leave Baghdad and go to Babylon. And there was a large debate, if indeed he ends up in Babylon, should we go after him? There is a report out, and I do not know if it's totally credible, but it's interesting, that indeed he did make his way to Babylon knowing that there was an injunction, a warning against attacking this rebuilt monument, this rebuilt city. And that was one of the factors that figured in of why our troops didn't press into Baghdad and go on from Baghdad to Babylon. Interesting, I don't know. But I do know that our troops were forbidden to attack this rebuilt Babylon. But here's the problem. Babylon, in chapter 17, there's no question. It's a city that's in seven hills. The identity is unquestionable. But chapter 18, is it really the Babylon in Iraq? Because here the shipmasters, the people on the ocean, see the burning of Babylon. You cannot see Babylon from any ocean or sea. It doesn't work in that way, seemingly. Babylon is inland. It's not a seaport town. But here, the analogy, that the language is very clear. This is not figurative. This is literal. Chapter 17 is symbolic. Chapter 18 is literal. There really is a destruction of a city in a single hour. And the men at sea watch the burning and they're going, alas, what city is like this that is being consumed by fire? And they cast, verse 19, dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea, by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she is made desolate. Over and over again, this idea, in a single hour, how could this be? As they're viewing it from their ships. What's heaven's response? Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. Rejoice. This corrupting, fornicating influence that has ruined people and cultures and nations is now coming to an end. Rejoice, heaven. The mighty angel, verse 21, took up a stone like a great millstone, cast it into the sea, and saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. Well, the voices, verse 22, of harpers and musicians and pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee. And no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. So music, cafes, Studio 21, hard rock, Planet Hollywood, all the rest, no more. That's it. Through. And all the grinding at the millstone. Well, I'm just grinding away at my job. My nose is to the grindstone. No more. That's it. The light, verse 23, of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. Again, old commentators were troubled by this. What does this mean? A whole city going up in smoke and suddenly no one even lights a candle? Who wouldn't light a candle in the moment of destruction? After the destruction was over, who wouldn't light a candle? I'll tell you who wouldn't light a candle. People who don't have candles. Modern culture. In modern cities today, in sophisticated cities, how many candles would be lit? If there was a total, complete power outage, there would be darkness. What would cause a power outage? Well, the destruction of a city and a nuclear exchange, of course. How terrifying that would be. No candlelight. No more marriages. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride shall be heard no more. No more normal life celebrating. All that's stopped now. Note three things here, and we're going to tie this up in a way that I think you'll find interesting. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth. Clue number one. Who, what, where is Babylon? Well, it says here, first of all, thy merchants were the great men of the earth. That doesn't mean they were great guys It means that they were the wealthy men of the earth. Did you see the story in the front page of many of our newspapers today? Maybe you've been following this tobacco controversy. How it looks as though there's going to be a settlement made in the hundreds of billions of dollars being paid out by tobacco companies in order to avoid all these cases, these litigation problems that the tobacco companies are having. They will admit to wrongdoing. They will pay what will be perhaps in the multiplied trillions ultimately. And you think, what's the deal? How can these tobacco companies, the seven major tobacco companies, stay in business? Well, the front page of the Chronicle today tells you how. Sales of cigarettes are going down in our nation, and they're going to be paying what seems to be an unbelievably huge, impossible-to-meet price, but not at all. It's a piece of cake. Because the sales of cigarettes around the world, American cigarettes, are skyrocketing. They're marketing aggressively in the poorest countries of the world. Now, here's the interesting thing. There is no longer any question whether cigarettes are good for you or not. Nobody questions that. No rational person. No one. But it's interesting because even though there's all these settlements and lawsuits, we're saying let the rest of the world be doomed. We're going to market that. We're going to give permission by our big corporations. We're going to try to put the squeeze on them so that our citizens aren't burned. But we're going to let our companies burn as many people around the world as we possibly can to keep the profit margin up, because it affects the huge multinational corporations, which indeed pay dividends on the stock market, in our bull stock market, our fabulous economic run that we're on. It's too important to keep the bull market going. We've got to allow these companies, even though they're dangerous, let them exploit poor people that don't know better. Let's let it go. The idea is this. This is what really angers the Lord righteously about these great men in Babylon. They're making a killing, literally. Doesn't matter how. Got to keep the economy going. Got to keep the profits flowing. Got to keep the bottom line growing. Thy merchants were the great men of the earth. They just make money. And by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. The word sorcery there is, again, that word I've talked to you about before, pharmakeia. Drugs figure in hugely in Babylon. All nations are deceived. The idea there in the language is very clear. All nations are caught in the web of pharmakeia. All nations are caught in the web of drug trafficking. Why? Because of Babylon. Now, you have been reading studies, no doubt, or come across articles on news shows or in magazines. You know that what really drives the drug industry in the world today, unquestionably, is the United States of America. That's it. The money is here. It's supply and demand. And we demand, and the world supplies. Heroin addiction, of course, is absolutely skyrocketing. We're pushing it. Calvin Klein advertisements, as you well know, he had the audacity to deny the fact that these advertisements that show these young women and young men stick thin and black around their eyes and wiped out, and it's obvious to anyone and everyone that we're talking about heroin addicts, the glorification of heroin. I mean, even Bill Clinton knows that. I mean, even our government leaders understand that. When the government sees it, it's pretty obvious to everybody. And Calvin Klein, maybe you saw him on Larry King Live. I was amazed when he said, no, it's not that. We just think that they're beautiful people, these models that weigh 40 pounds and have been beat up and wiped out. But boy, is it moving products. That's the real key. It's all about money. It's all about drugs. It's all about pleasure, sorcery. So Babylon is the place where great men, rich men, are. Babylon is the place where drugs have caught the whole world in a web of drug marketing. And the third thing we see here, and in her was found the blood of prophets, of saints, and all that were slain upon the earth. The death of saints. It falls on Babylon's head. Well, what do you mean? Here's a shocking statistic for you. Since the turn of the century, 1900, there have been an average of 250,000 born-again Christians martyred every year. Now let that sink in for a moment. Every year from 1900 to 1997, there have been an average of 250,000 per year. That's a million in 4 years. You can do the math. Christians are being wiped out around the world at an unbelievable rate. And again, if you've been following current events, you know that this issue is presently before the U.S. Congress. Because the Christian community is at last saying, hey, wait, what's taking place around the world in some of these countries, the slaughtering of born-again believers, America must take a stand, particularly as it relates to the nation of China, where most of the martyrdom, at least the highest percentage of this kind of brutal persecution, has taken place. But you know what? Guess what? We refuse to deal with it. We have once again said China will have most favored nation status because China is the greatest market in the world today for our goods. 1 and 2.5 billion people. Too big. It's Babylon. Babylon who says, even though we know as a nation, as a country, even though we know that there's the slaughtering, the brutal butchering of Christians, we cannot afford economically to make too big of a deal about this. Let them die. Let there be abortions by the multiplied many hundreds of millions in China. Let them be 9 out of 10 are girls being aborted, as I mentioned in a previous study, because they're allowed one child per family in China. Where's Patricia Ireland? Where's the Now Gang? Where's the feminists? Where are these women? I don't understand this. I really don't get it. Where are the women activists? Why wouldn't they say, these feminists, why wouldn't they say, we got to take a stand against China? 9 out of 10 abortions are girl babies, fetuses being aborted. They take ultrasound, they find out it's a woman or girl, and they say, flush her. Because every family, if they only have one child, is opting in 90% of the cases for a boy to carry on the family name. And see, we know this stuff. That's the problem. Our nation, our leaders, our whole government understands the situation very, very, very definitely, unquestionably. But, so John, let me get this straight then. Now you're confusing me. You say, You talked about Babylon in Iraq, and you're saying that that prophecy has not been fulfilled, at least according to some experts, where the whole city is wiped out like Sodom and Gomorrah off the face of the map, and yet we see Babylon emerging. We see a city there still functioning or being restored as we speak. And then you're talking about this city, though, described here that seems to be a seaport city, and that influences the whole world. What are you suggesting? What I'm suggesting to you is there are those who believe that Babylon is America. New York City, specifically. Dominating the world's economy. I want to show you some interesting things of why that could very well be. Turn quickly with me to Isaiah chapter 13. Chapter 18, actually. Now, for you who are real students of Bible prophecy, if you want to pursue this further, you need to look up three sets of scriptures to study in depth when you have a chance. Revelation 17 and 18, that which we're doing tonight, dealing with Babylon. And then to sort of really put the pieces together, you need to look at Jeremiah chapter 50 and 51 and Isaiah chapter 13 and 14. We'll look at some of this in a moment, but first chapter 18, where we see something being talked about that intrigues many Bible scholars. Woe to the land overshadowing with wings, or shadowing with wings, verse 1 of Isaiah chapter 18. Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. Considered in Bible days in Isaiah's time to be the unknown realm. That is, when you talk about the rivers of Ethiopia, you're saying, which is beyond. Timbuktu, you know, way out there somewhere. The land shadowing with wings. And there are those that suggest in that we see now being spoken of prophetically the insignia which represents our nation specifically. For our insignia, of course, is the American bald eagle, and you've seen the great seals and the insignias with the wings spread out, the shadowing of wings. Could be interesting. That sends ambassadors, verse 2, by sea. Where would there be a nation in which you would send your ambassadors as it relates to the Middle East here, chapter 18? Where would you send ambassadors by sea to? Beyond the sea. And go, verse 2 goes on to say, ye swift messengers, to a nation scattered and peeled. And again, if you have a margin, a Bible with marginal references, it translates the Hebrew correctly. Go, ye swift messengers, middle of verse 2, to a nation outspread and polished, or wide and polished. So there's a land that's way out there beyond our understanding, they would say in Isaiah's day, with the overshadowing of wings that you send ambassadors to over the sea from where we're living here in the Middle East. And it's a wide land, and it's wide. And it's a polished nation. That's the idea. That's the literal Hebrew. Wide, outspread, and polished. To a people awesome from their beginning. A nation, watch this, verse 2 goes on to say, a nation meted out and trodden down. Now again, if you have a marginal reference, it will say in your margin, of line and treading underfoot, which means this. Meted out, or of line and treading, means you're measuring it out and you're conquering it underfoot. You're wide and outspread, and you're taking line by line and you're conquering the land. You're tromping on the land. You're taking over the land. This nation that's awesome from the beginning is spreading out and conquering her own country. And there are those that say, my goodness, this is an incredibly precise description of our own history. We had an awesome beginning. The whole world watched the American Revolution. And what did we do? We felt there was a manifest destiny. A destiny to move across the country from coast to coast. And whatever indigenous people groups are in the way, so be it. We've got a destiny from sea to shining sea, you see. And then it makes this interesting reference. It's interesting. A land who's been widened and trodden down, conquered, whose land the rivers have spoiled. So in the process of this widening, conquering, far-off country that's by the sea, and there's also pollution. There's the pollution of the pristine country that once was, that never again it will be pristine, you see. The rivers have been spoiled. Now, turn over to the book of Jeremiah chapter 50. And I want to show you something very interesting. We don't have time, obviously, to look at this in depth. I'll just point out to you four or five scriptures, and you can read them through, and you can think about it and see what conclusions you come to. But in talking about Babylon, we read this. Verse 12, there's coming a time when your mother shall be sore confounded. She that bore you shall be ashamed. Behold, the hindermost of the nations shall be a wilderness, a dry land, a desert. Coming a time when Babylon, whoever Babylon is, as it relates to the final destruction, you see chapter 50 and 51 relate to the final destruction of Babylon. It is the same event being talked about as is talked in chapter 18 of Revelation. And the mother is confounded. The mother is amazed, perplexed. And there are those that say that's going to be exactly what England is going to feel and think when our nation goes up in smoke, when our Babylon falls apart in a single hour. Oh, come on. I get where you're going. You're trying to say that we're going to get wiped out in a single hour in a nuclear... You're not reading the paper. The Cold War is over. You're not reading the paper. This was in the paper 3 days ago. Russia revives first strike policy on nuclear warheads. The article talks about for the first time in history, Russia is publicly acknowledging... You can check it out yourself... Russia is publicly acknowledging that she, if feeling pressured, will launch nuclear weapons first strike, which means she will not wait for an attack, but she will be preemptive in the use of her nuclear arsenal. Interesting. I don't know what this means. Just interesting, I think. But we read in verse 37 as you go through these things, boy, a sword is upon their horses and upon their chariots and upon all the mingled people. In other words, this nation that is now being destroyed, the mother confounded, confused in her observing of Babylon being destroyed, if that indeed be England, our mother, if you would. But the people of Babylon... Unlike historical Babylon, the people of Babylon are called a mingled people. That means it's an interracial group. It's a melting pot, which is not true in historical Babylon, where it was a monoethnic group. This idea here is it's a mingled people that are being devastated. It's a nation of a mingled people. Interesting. Chapter 51, turn the page and look at verse 13. Still talking about Babylon, this wherever this is, this Babylon, O thou, verse 13, that dwellest upon many waters, abundant in treasures, thine end is come, the measure of thy covetousness. Now, historical Babylon does not dwell upon many waters. It dwells upon one river, the Euphrates. Whoever Babylon is has water all around it, like the Atlantic and like the Pacific, and like the Gulf of Mexico, and like the greatest, as you well know, 1/4 of all fresh water in the world is in the Great Lakes. Did you know that? It's amazing. We're surrounded by water. 1/4 of all fresh water in the world is in the Great Lakes. So you have the Great Lakes, you have the Gulf, you have the Atlantic, you have the Pacific. This Babylon is dwelling among many waters, abundant in treasure. Gets even more interesting. Look at verse 49, if you would. As Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Babylon, wherever, whatever Babylon is, it exists at the same time that Israel exists. And it's held responsible for the destruction of Israel. The implication could well be that when Babylon could have come and rescued Israel in an invasion, described perhaps the invasion talked about in Ezekiel, that Babylon chose not to get involved in the war for reasons that deal obviously with economy. We talk about the Russian invasion described very, very, very clearly in Ezekiel chapter 38 and chapter 39. Whatever, this Babylon allows Israel to be slain, which means that it exists at the same time historically as Israel does, which, how about this, verse 53. Though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come unto her, saith the Lord. It's not, even if Babylon could, it is Babylon will mount up to the heavens. We're talking space program. Babylon will mount, and what will she do? She will fortify herself in the heavens. Now, these are things that the prophets must have thought, how do you fortify yourself in the heavens? Well, we know. Star Wars. I mean, all of this space stuff. Only one nation truly seems to fit this particular sequence of descriptions. A nation mounting up into the heavens, fortifying herself from the heavens. A nation surrounded by water. A nation that is existing at the time of Israel and allows Israel to fall in the day, in the hour of Israel's need. A nation that is incredibly wealthy, a nation that's, now we go to Revelation again, the nation that allows drugs to be driving economy, the nation that lives deliciously, the nation that's on the water when the city of its true center of commercial activity goes up in smoke in a single hour. You've been patient, I don't have the time, but I leave with you a simple thought. That it very well could be. The Babylon described in Revelation chapter 18 is America. Very possibly. Well, thanks, you say. Why didn't you wait till the 4th of July for this study? Couple of closing comments, and I want you to listen. Please don't pack it up too much yet. I'm not saying that Babylon is America. It could be that Babylon, the Saddam Hussein's pet project, that city, the literal physical Babylon in Iraq, it could be that that will become the center of world commerce in the time of the tribulation. That is a very possible scenario. And for you who know your Bibles a little bit better, Zechariah 5 leads to a possible conclusion of Babylon on the plain of Shinar truly being the place where commercial and political activity is centered after Rome collapses, Revelation chapter 17. When Rome is devoured, that there very well could be a moving, Antichrist will make a shrewd move and choose to move his whole base of operations to Babylon in Iraq. And that's another story. It could be. I'm not saying that that won't be. And then that Babylon being destroyed, completely wiped off the face of the map. It could be, though, that the Babylon, there's only one place that has such wealth and controls the whole world. And that is our country. And it could be that it's a description of our nation going up in smoke. And the whole world saying, now what are we going to do economically? How can we, what does this, hey, we're in trouble now. Not because we love Americans and we're sorry to see them fried. It's because who's going to buy our hibachis and maracas and all that stuff? I mean, they were crazy. They just bought more and more junk. I mean, those guys bought everything they could buy. Who's going to buy our watches? Our textiles. My opinion, for whatever it's worth, is that America is going to go down. Whether or not she is Babylon, she is strangely absent from the end times scenario as far as it relates to the power brokers in the tribulation, which seem to be the false religious system in Rome, the revived Roman Empire, a restored Russia and Israel, as well as a Chinese-Asian coalition coming from the east. But it's really difficult to try and figure out exactly how our country fits in. And either it is because this nation is truly devastated in a nuclear exchange, described perhaps in Revelation chapter 18, in 1 hour it all goes up in smoke and the whole world is amazed. The merchants from their ships, if you would, watching Babylon burn, New York City go up in smoke. Or it could be that the rapture of the church will so gut this country. And I hope that's true. That the rapture of the church so cripples this nation that we do not figure in the end time scenario. Because the Christians, any and all who believe in Jesus Christ, be they strong or weak, be they solid or vacillating, hey, those that believe that Jesus died for their sins and rose again and embrace that gift of gracious salvation, they're up and they're gone. The whole body is taken. If I was to leave tonight for Hawaii, wouldn't that be grand? But if I was to, guess what? My whole body goes. My toe may be infected. My head may be hurting. My fingernail may be falling off, whatever it might be. But the whole body goes. I don't say, well, I'm going to leave my toe here because it's infected. Or I'm going to leave my head behind because it's aching. No, the whole body goes. So too in the rapture, the whole body goes, gang. You understand that? The whole gang goes. Boom. And we're transformed in the process. You say, well, I don't believe that, John. I believe that only strong Christians go up. Or you say, I believe that we're going to go through the tribulation. That's okay. You're welcome to that belief. That's fine. You'll still go. You'll still come along. And I'll explain it to you on the way up. So, that is another very possible scenario, that the rapture will so decimate this nation that we just don't figure in to the end time deal. But this I do know with absolute certainty, and this is what we need to leave tonight with from this chapter. I'll read it to you, a scripture that you're aware of, but need to be reminded of, at least I do. Go to now, Brother James says to us, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. For you have heaped treasures together for the last days. The items that you just store that are rusting, the garments that are stored, because someday I'm going to lose 20 pounds and I'll wear that sweater. All those garments that are just getting eaten by moths and all the stuff in my garage that's just rusting out, someday I'm going to need that thing. Why should I give it away? I mean, I'm going to use that electric toothbrush, you know, when I figure out how to fix it. Cost me $10. I mean, come on. You've heaped up treasures for the last days. Oh. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your field. You've hired these people to reap your fields, but you've kept back from them by fraud. You've figured out ways to extract every penny you can from them instead of being generous and gracious with them. You know how to trick your workers, not pay your bills, cut corners. Ooh. The cries of them which have reaped your fields without proper recompense have entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. I've heard their cries. All those cheating, selfish, junky things that you've been doing, the Lord says, I've been hearing. I'm the Lord of Sabbath, the Lord of rest, generosity, kindness. And I've watched what you've done, John. Applegate congregation. Oh, I really gypped her. I really got a deal from him. Oh, I sold him that lemon. Got rid of that baby sucker. Lord says, I hear. I'm watching. I didn't pay that bill. I beat the system. I didn't pay it. Lord says, I'm noticing. You have lived in pleasure on the earth. You have been wanton. You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. You've been pleasing yourself. You're nourishing your own hearts. You're taking care of business, your business. You have condemned and forgotten the just. Oh, be patient thereof, brethren. Be patient. Suffer with long patience. Unto the coming of the Lord, behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye patient also. So establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draws nigh. Do not grudge one against another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth at the door. Don't gyp each other. Don't begrudge each other. Don't cheat each other. Be as generous as you can be. The Lord hears. The Lord knows. And His coming is near, you see. Huh. That's the message. A voice from heaven crying, come ye out from Babylon. Come ye out from Babylon. Be not a partaker with her. It's an uncomfortable scripture for us, isn't it? It's a challenge for me. It's convicting. I need to hear it. I need to heed it. Let's pray, shall we? Father, again, I thank you that you have called us out of Babylon and you have made us a people of a new and better nation, a holy nation. I pray that while we're here, Lord, that we might be ambassadors of the heavenly city in the way we treat co-workers, in the way we pay bills and are generous with others and let go of that which would corrupt and canker. Father, I admit that I'm so vulnerable, so susceptible to the Babylon mentality that is all around us. Forgive me, forgive us. Show us, Father, ways in which we might be set free. Whatever that might mean, that we might be setting our hearts on things above, that we might be really living in the way that you truly have told us life should be lived. For health and strength and daily food, we praise thy name, O Lord. You've done so much for us. Abundance and blessing, good things you've lavished upon us, and we thank you for that, Father. But may those things not possess us. May we be good stewards. Lord, I know that every good and perfect gift comes from you, and I also understand that these things are simply to be used for a short season, not to be lived for, not to be made idols out of. Give us wisdom. May we use things, Father, and love people, not love things and use people. And where we have loved things and used people, forgive us. Forgive us. Help us to use things just to love folks. Help us. In Jesus' name. So, John, what's your real personal opinion? What do you think? Which is it? We'll talk about that in our study next time, perhaps. Perhaps not. But I would just encourage you to understand this, that the specifics of is Babylon truly Babylon in Iraq, or is it, as has been talked about this evening, perhaps an allusion to our own nation? Either way, the Lord wants you and me to be people of a heavenly mentality. That's the real key. To really know, even as we talked about Sunday, it truly is going to burn. It really, truly is. Don't take it too seriously, this stuff. Don't take, you know, be as generous as you can be. Thank the Lord for what he gives you. But don't take it too seriously. Share it as you can. Let it go as he leads. If there's anything, listen, this is the old pastor talking to you again. If there's anything you say, I just couldn't part with that, do it immediately. Really. If there are things in your house, or if there are things in your driveway, or if there are things that you say, I just really couldn't part with that, it would kill me. Dump it immediately. It's gotcha. It's gotcha. It's gotcha. And you'll be real wise and real free if you say, ooh, as painful as that is, I need to get rid of that because it's got me. Everything Jesus calls us to do is for our benefit. He told the rich young ruler to do what? Get rid of your stuff. Because he knew the rich young ruler was controlled by that pile. Wasn't trying to be brutal with him. He was trying to be really liberating for him. So too for you, for me. In the next day or two or three, the Lord may speak to your heart and say, you know what? Let it go. Give it to your pastor. God bless you. You're dismissed.